In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. Our guest today is Janet Phelan, an investigative journalist who currently writes for Activist Post. She was a guest on the show in its first year in 2010 and broke the news about her findings of dual lines in residential water systems. She returns with updates on that story and more later in the show. Let's look now at some of the stories in other news. One of the linchpins to make the worldwide pandemic work smoothly is the 90% inaccuracy rate in using the RT-PCR test developed by Dr. Kerry Mullis to determine SARS-2 or COVID-19 infection. We've heard from several doctors about the PCR test inaccuracy. We've heard Dr. Anthony Fauci say that using the PCR test at 35 cycles of magnification to determine a viral infection will have meaningless results. Yet the FDA has regulated the PCR test cycle magnification 5 times higher to the rate of 40, which will increase false positives. Here in this rare audio is Dr. Kerry Mullis explaining how the PCR test is misused when relied on to determine infection.
I want to ask this to Kerry. How do they misuse PCR to estimate all these supposed free viral RNAs that may or may not be there?
If they could find this virus in you at all, and with PCR, if you do it well, you can find almost anything in anybody. It starts making you believe in the sort of Buddhist notion that everything is contained in everything else, right? I mean, because if you can amplify one single molecule up to something that you can really measure, which PCR can do, then there's just very few molecules that you don't have at least one single one of them in your body, okay? So that could be thought of as a misuse of it, just to claim that it's meaningful. But the real misuse of it is that you don't need to test for HIV. You don't need to test for the other 10,000 retroviruses that are unnamed also in the subject. See, somebody that's got HIV generally is going to have almost anything that you can test for, because they have definitely been, HIV is a fairly rare virus. There's only 1 million of us out of 250, 300 million people in America that have that virus. So you have to get around, either your mother had to have it and pass it to you, or you have to really be paying a lot of attention to people that do have it and paying only attention to them and get a pretty good chance of getting it that way. It's hard to get it, but if you have it, there's a good chance you've also got a lot of other ones. Because you've been in the market for, it's been possible for you to get a lot of, to test for that one and say that has any special meaning is what I think is the problem. Not that PCR has been misused. It's like,
is it an estimation?
It's not an estimation. No, it's a really quantitative thing. It tells you something about nature and about what's there. But it allows you to take a very minuscule amount of anything and make it measurable, and then talk about it in meetings and stuff like it is important. See, that's not a misuse, that's just sort of a misinterpretation.
Even after all PCR, this quantitative PCR, that if you just get down to a basic virological count, it's still 1 in 1,000 to 1 in 10,000, HIV in 1 to 1 in 1,000, 1 in 500 to 1 in 1,000 T cells.
There's very little of what they call HIV, and what's been brought out here by Phil Pott and Isai already, the measurement for it is not exact at all. It's not as good as our measurement for things like apples. An apple is an apple. You know, you can get something that's kind of like, if you got enough things that look kind of like an apple and you stick them all together, you might think of it as an apple. But HIV is like that. Those tests are all based on things that are invisible, and the results are inferred in a sense. PCR is separate from that. It's just a process that's used to make a whole lot of something out of something. That's what
also,
it is. It doesn't tell you that you're sick, and it doesn't tell you that the thing you ended up with really was going to hurt you or anything like that.
In this next piece of audio from an interview with Dr. Kerry Mullis, he gives insight into Dr. Anthony Fauci.
What is it about humanity that wants to go to all the details and stuff and listen? You know, these guys like Fauci get up there and start talking. You know, he doesn't know anything really about anything. And I'd say that to his face, nothing. The man thinks you can take a blood sample and stick it in an electron microscope, and if it's got a virus in there, you'll know it. He doesn't understand electron microscopy, and he doesn't understand medicine, and he should not be in a position like he's in. Most of those guys up there on the top are just total administrative people, and they don't know anything about what's going on the bottom. You know, those guys have got an agenda, which is not what we would like them to have, being that we pay for them to take care of our health in some way. They've got a personal kind of agenda. They make up their own rules as they go. They change them when they want to. And they smugly, like Tony Fauci, does not mind going on television in front of the people that pay his salary and lie directly into the camera. You can't expect the sheep to really respect the best and the brightest. They don't know the difference, really. I mean, I like humans, don't get me wrong, but basically the vast majority of them do not possess the ability to judge who is and who isn't a really good scientist. I mean, that's a problem, that's a main problem actually with science, I'd say, in this century, because science is being judged by people, funding is being done by people who don't understand it. Okay, who do we trust? Fauci? Fauci doesn't know enough to, you know, if Fauci wants to get on television with somebody who knows a little bit about this stuff and debate him, he could easily do it, because he's been asked. I mean, I've had a lot of people, president of the University of South Carolina, ask Fauci if he'd come down there and debate me on the stage in front of the student body, because I wanted somebody who was from the other side to come down there and balance.
That was Nobel Prize winner Dr. Kerry Mullis, developer of the PCR test. As many listeners know, digital voting machines or black box voting has been a plague to the voting process. A brief look at the history of companies such as Dominion reveal a sordid history of corruption. As the evidence emerges, the corporate-owned press changes its tune from there's no evidence to there's not enough evidence to make a difference. But now things are changing. We listen to part of a presentation from attorney Sidney Powell at a rally in Georgia.
I knew the swamp was really bad, but it's at least 20% worse than I thought it was. There is a whole lot of draining that's going to have to be done. And that's why they have fought so hard to get rid of President Trump and tried every dirty, nasty, evil, illegal trick in the book to do it. Yeah, it is pure evil. We've already traced a lot of the money that did this back to China. We have internet white hat hackers, I think they call them, who saw back doors open in the system and saw people in Iran and China and Hong Kong and Serbia and I don't know how many countries having influence in our election system. All of this must come to a screeching halt right now. You and your children and your grandchildren and their children deserve the very best America has to offer. The only thing that really distinguishes us from other countries is our love of freedom and the application of the rule of law. It hasn't been applied fairly or equally in probably two decades. We must demand that change right now. We will give all our evidence to the Department of Justice as soon as we get it pulled together. I know. I wish I could say I didn't have concerns about how that would be handled, but unfortunately I still do. It's going to take a lot of indictments and fast to show us that they really mean business, because there has been flagrant election fraud. We have evidence of everything from people buying votes with checks written from a business on K Street in D.C. to ballots being shredded, ballots being manufactured, ballots coming across the border from Mexico that are counterfeit, a plane full of ballots that came in, ballots distributed across state lines after being faked. I mean, there is no kind of voter fraud that hasn't been experienced this year across the country. Yeah, Georgia was absolutely full of it. Rife with voter fraud, but so are other states, including North Carolina and Virginia. Pennsylvania went solid for Trump. Yet they're still, yep. So we need to flood the legislators here in Georgia and the governor and the secretary of state with phone calls and letters. Yeah, I know. Everybody feels like they're not being listened to, and that's just not right. This is your state and your country, and they need to remember they work for you. I just want to thank you all so much for caring enough to be here today. Feels like it's his honor, and so does the rest of our significant team who have been working day and night since the election, none of whom have been paid a dime yet, although we do, people have been generating, have been contributing generously to defendingtherepublic.org, but we haven't even had time to get the stuff set up to write a check to pay anybody with yet. We're too busy fighting the fight, but yeah. Thank you. I know you have my six, and we all really appreciate that. Once again, you inspire us. God bless you, and God bless America.
In one article, it reads, an investigation into SEC filings has revealed that the firm, which owns Dominion Voting Systems, received $400 million from a Swiss bank with close links to the Chinese government, less than a month before the election. The investigation centers on Staple Street Capital, which acquired Dominion Voting Systems in 2018. Dominion Voting Systems operates voting machines in 28 states and has been accused by President Trump and his supporters of being involved in deleting millions of votes for Donald Trump, in addition to switching votes to Biden on election night. Other connections between Dominion Voting Systems and the Chinese government have also emerged in recent weeks, including the company's core infrastructure manager of information technology, Andy Huang, who previously worked for China Telecom, which is mainly run by the Chinese government, reported by the National Pulse. President Donald Trump also delivered an important speech last week chronicling the evidence of vote manipulation, such as through digital voting machines or ballot harvesting and tampering. Let's have a listen.
We have in all swing states major infractions or outright fraud, which is far more in numbers or votes than we need to overturn the results of a state. In other words, in Wisconsin, as an example, where we were way up on election night, They ultimately had us miraculously losing by 20,000 votes. And I can show you right here that Wisconsin, we're leading by a lot. And then at 3:42 in the morning, there was this. It was a massive dump of votes. Mostly Biden, almost all Biden. And to this day, everyone's trying to figure out, where did it come from? But I went from leading by a lot to losing by a little. And that's right here. That's at 3:42 in the morning. That's Wisconsin. A terrible thing. Terrible, terrible thing. But we will have far more, many times more, than the 20,000 votes needed to overturn the state. If we are right about the fraud, Joe Biden can't be president. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of votes. We're talking about numbers like nobody has ever seen before. Just as an example, in certain states, we'll be down by, let's say, 7,000 votes. But we'll find later on 20,000, 50,000, 100,000, 200,000 discrepancies or fraudulent votes. And that includes votes that went through when they were not allowed to be seen by Republican poll watchers because the poll watchers were locked out of the building. Or people that innocently came to vote on November 3rd, who were all excited about their vote. They were happy. They were proud to be citizens of the United States of America. And they went up and they said, I'd like to vote. And they were told that they can't vote. I'm sorry, they were told. I'm sorry. You've already voted by mail-in ballot. Congratulations. We received a ballot, so you can no longer vote. They didn't know what to do. They had no one to complain to. Most just left and said, that's strange. But many people complained and complained vehemently. And in a lot of cases, they filled out a provisional ballot, which was almost never used, but in virtually every case was a vote for Trump. In other words, they went in to vote, and they were told that they voted. And they didn't vote. And they left, and they felt horror. And they lost respect for our system. And this happened tens of thousands of times all over the country. That's how desperate the Democrats were. They would fill out ballots of people, not even knowing if these people were going to show up. And when they did show up, they said, sorry, you've already voted. And on top of everything else, we have a company that's very suspect. Its name is Dominion. With the turn of a dial or the change of a chip, you can press a button for Trump and the vote goes to Biden. What kind of a system is this? We have to go to paper. Maybe it takes longer. But the only secure system is paper. Not these systems that nobody understands, including, in many cases, the people that run them. Although, unfortunately, I think they understand them far too well. In one Michigan county, as an example, that used Dominion systems, they found that nearly 6,000 votes had been wrongly switched from Trump to Biden. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. This is what we caught. How many didn't we catch? Are there hundreds of other examples throughout the country? Are there thousands? We just got lucky, and they called it a glitch. But we found numerous glitches that evening. 96% of the company's political donations went to Democrats, not surprisingly. And frankly, when you look at who's running the company? Who's in charge? Who owns it, which we don't know? Where are the votes counted, which we think are counted in foreign countries, not in the United States? Dominion is a disaster. Election authorities in Texas have repeatedly blocked the deployment of Dominion systems due to concerns about security vulnerabilities and the potential for errors and outright fraud. Every district that uses Dominion systems must be carefully monitored and carefully investigated, but not only for the future. Right now, we're worried about the present and what went on with an election that we won without question. Under my lead, the Republicans won almost every state house in the United States, which they weren't expected to do. We won up to 16 seats in the House. The numbers are still being tabulated because there are 9 seats that nobody really knows. They don't know. They're still, 2 weeks later, still under consideration because it's a mess. Republicans were supposed to lose many seats, and instead they won those seats in the House. And a very important election that's coming up will determine whether or not we hold the Senate. David Perdue and Kelly Loeffler are two tremendous people. Unfortunately, in Georgia, they're using the same horrible Dominion system. And it's already been out that hundreds of thousands, think of it, hundreds of thousands of absentee ballots have been requested. You check it out, who's requesting those ballots? The difference is, it's one state, and we will have our eyes on it like nobody's ever watched anything before, because we have to win those 2 Senate seats. The tremendous success we had in the House of Representatives, and the tremendous success we've had so far in the Senate, unexpected success all over the country and right here in Washington. It is statistically impossible that the person, me, that led the charge, lost. The greatest pollsters, the real pollsters, not the ones that had us down 17 points in Wisconsin when we actually won, or the ones that had us down 4 or 5 points in Florida and we won by many points, or had us even and down in Texas and we won by a lot. Not those pollsters, but real pollsters, pollsters that are fair and honest, said, we can't understand a thing like this. It's never happened before. You led the country to victory, and you were the only one that was lost. It's not possible. The Speaker of the House of a certain state said, sir, I expected to lose my seat, and instead, because of you, and because of that incredible charge and all of those rallies, we got a tremendous victory. And everybody knows it. You were much more popular than me, sir, except I got many more votes than you did. And it's impossible that that happened. There is something wrong. I'll tell you what's wrong. Voter fraud. Here's an example. This is Michigan. At 6:31 in the morning, a vote dump of 149,772 votes came in unexpectedly. We were winning by a lot. That batch was received in horror. Nobody knows anything about it. By the way, there's your line. This is one of many. Here's what is normal. And all of a sudden, look at that. This is normal. Normal. Look, even here. Normal. And then, boom, all of a sudden, I go from winning by a lot to losing a tight race. It's corrupt. Detroit is corrupt. I have a lot of friends in Detroit. They know it. But Detroit is totally corrupt. Look at this. Look at this. That's at 6:31 in the morning. Unexpectedly came in the recent recount in Georgia, which means nothing because they don't want to check signatures. And if you're not going to check signatures in Georgia, it doesn't work. But we have a Secretary of State and a governor who made it very difficult to check signatures. Why? You'll have to ask them. But without a signature match or check, it doesn't matter. They found thousands and thousands of votes that were out of whack, all against me. This was during a recount that I didn't even think mattered. They found many thousands of votes, and that recount didn't matter. The one that matters is the one that's going on now, that because of the fact it's so close, they had to, by law, give another recount. But the recount has to be a recount where they check the signatures. Otherwise, they're just checking the same dishonest thing. It won't matter. In this case, the signatures on envelopes are the only thing that is relevant. We will compare the signature on the envelope to the signatures from past elections, and we will find that many thousands of people signed these ballots illegally. The Democrats had this election rigged right from the beginning. They used the pandemic, sometimes referred to as the China virus, where it originated, as an excuse to mail out tens of millions of ballots, which ultimately led to a big part of the fraud, a fraud that the whole world is watching. And there is no one happier right now than China.
That was part of the speech by President Donald Trump laying out some evidence discovered during the legal investigations uncovering rampant voter fraud and manipulation. Today we're joined by past guest Janet Phelan. She is an investigative journalist and author of the groundbreaking Exposé Exile. She also writes articles for independent media such as The Activist Post. Some of her previous articles have been published in the Los Angeles Times and Orange Coast Magazine. Janet, welcome back to Another News.
Thank you so much for having me back on your show, Jeff.
Well, it's good to have you back, Janet. The last time you were on the show, which was around 10 years ago, we were talking about your research on the double water lines, the dual water lines going into residential households. Would you remind listeners about this investigation you've done, and are there any updates?
Yes, I certainly will. And I want to mention that given the situation with the quote-unquote pandemic, this is very relevant now. So I was investigating infrastructure. I was working as a columnist at the Santa Monica Daily Press in California, and I was specifically looking at water infrastructure. What I found is that we have two water lines running down the street in Main Town America. Now, these two water lines are cross-connected by a single service line, which goes into each house. Now, the question is, why is that a big deal? As it turns out, it is a very big deal. When I started requesting blueprints from city water agencies, I found that this second line was being removed, redacted from the prints, from the blueprints. So when I pressed the issue, I began to get letters from these city agencies stating things like national security. Something was very resonant about that second line. No problem about the first line. It was the second line. So an analysis of the non-redacted blueprints, and I was able through some subterfuge to get real blueprints, not excised. Well, it shows something very interesting. And as I stated, the two parallel mains are cross-connected. And whatever is in that second main, let's just call it main X for right now, is being withheld, is being held back by a remote control valve. And I was able to get some of these pictures of some of these valves in a city yard, and indeed, they have RFID addresses inscribed in them. So what this means, essentially, is that whatever is in main X, let's say it's vodka, okay, it can be selectively distributed into pre-selected households. Every household has their own service line, and every household has its own RFID valve attached to main X. So it's really not that hard to picture. If you have a diabolical scenario, a flip of a switch could release the contents of main X, the vodka, or the Ebola, or whatever it is, into, let's say, all African-American homes. Or, Jeff, it could release the contents into all brave and valiant radio talk show host homes. So I began to understand what the capabilities were here. And then I began to look at some of the legal buttressing for what I was becoming aware was very likely a covert system that had the capability to cause mass illness or even mass death. The first change in law, which I became aware of, was Section 817 of the USA Patriot Act. And I encourage everyone listening to look at Section 817. So what this, it's the expansion of the biological weapons statute. And what the statute says, in effect, is that there are certain activities, biological weapons activities, which are prohibited and which will incur a prison sentence and or a fine. But when you get to the end of the section, it states, and I quote, "The prohibitions contained in this section shall not apply to any duly authorized U.S. governmental activity." So in other words, the U.S. has a free hand in violating its own bioweapons laws.
We're getting the beeps on the line again. That has happened with certain guests. I don't think you're doing it. You're in a cyber cafe in another country speaking with me.
Well, I'm sorry there are beeps. I hope that the audio quality remains strong, because I think that this is information that people really need to know. So we were talking about Section 817. So my next stop, looking at laws, was something called the Critical Infrastructure Information Protection Act. I believe it was of 2002. Now, in this piece of legislation, I found that it becomes a federal crime, which can result in prison time for a government employee to release any information about critical infrastructure. And remember, that first line is not critical infrastructure. They're happy to give you blueprints about it. Second line, it's off limits, okay? So that actually impacted my investigation a bit. I was having meetings with the Medford, Oregon Water Commission, as I had been able to get unredacted blueprints, not from the Water Commission. I had to go into some level of subterfuge, but I did get unredacted blueprints, which showed, of course, the second line. Now, the Medford Water Commission very nicely makes available to the public what they call plats, which show where water lines are in Medford, Oregon. I mean, that's they do it for free. You can just walk into the commission and copy this off. The problem was that these plats only showed one line. And I already had bona fide blueprints showing two lines. So I had several meetings with the Medford Water Commission. And I was in a meeting with their public information person, Laura Hodnett, as well as one of the city engineers named Eric Johnson. And I had presented the plats and also the the blueprints, and I said, look, we've got a big discrepancy here. Like, can you explain this? And they were, they were stuttering and muttering and not doing a very good job here at all. So finally, I just came out and asked if their verbal responses were being governed by that section of the Critical Infrastructure Information Protection Act, which makes it a crime, a federal crime. I just asked them because they couldn't seem to get a sentence out. And they stood up, the two of them stood up and said, the interview's over, and they walked out of the room.
They stood up and walked out. As you've kind of prepared us to understand, because they might get in trouble for responding to you in any way that might disclose information?
Well, this is what I assume, because I directly asked them, you know, you're not responding to questions. Is that because of this law, which makes it, you know, a felony? And they just said, interview over, and they left. So, you know, one can draw one's own conclusions from that, certainly. Anyway, there was another law that I want to discuss briefly that was signed by President Trump in 2018, which established a new agency under the Department of Homeland Security to be in charge of critical infrastructure. And that was the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency Act, which he signed in 2018. Now, what interested me particularly about this law is that there was a caveat in the law that said there shall be no private right of action. So what this means, again, is that citizens or citizens groups cannot bring any sort of legal action under this act, and the whole thing has to be managed and prosecuted and so forth by our government. Also, this is where the deception begins to get really thick. The U.S. has obligations under international law. The U.S. is a party to the international treaty accord called the Biological Weapons Convention, which came into force in the 1970s. And one of the U.S.'s obligations under the treaty is to report any and all bioweapons activities to the convention at large. So I started looking into the U.S.'s behavior on the international scene, and I found that the U.S. failed to report the changes written into that Section 817. The U.S. did not report to the convention that they had passed a law called the Expansion of the Biological Weapons Statute, which gives the U.S. permission to violate its own bioweapons laws. Now, I had occasion to speak with one of the delegates to the Biological Weapons Convention in Geneva about this in 2011. His name's Chris Park. And he said, oh, well, it was an oversight. Well, I'm not so sure, because there was some more stuff that the U.S. was engaged in 2011 at the Biological Weapons Convention in Geneva, Switzerland. The U.S. presented a side event. These took place during the lunch breaks, usually, and a particular country or an NGO or someone would make a presentation. So you had a smaller group than the big convention itself, but you still had a lot of people in that room. And the U.S. gave a side event in which a representative from the Department of Homeland Security, his name is Dr. Daniel Gerstein, he provided a PowerPoint presentation in which he put up on a screen the biological weapons legislation that the U.S. has passed into law. The only problem was that Gerstein's presentation featured the old legislation, not 817. So it did appear to me that there was more than an oversight going on, that there was a deliberate attempt to mislead the other delegates.
We're speaking about the piece of legislation embedded in the USA Patriot Act, that's Section 817, the expansion of the biological weapons statute that gave the U.S. government immunity from violating its own biological weapons laws, which is really strange because if the U.S. government is caught violating its own laws and this immunity is brought forward, and this gets into the public domain, still, I think people would be really upset and would try to nullify that amendment.
Well, yes, and the fact is, I did not find any other reporter who actually delved into this at all. There simply are no other articles I have found where reporters read 817 and go, wait a second, what's this caveat at the end? So I thought that was sort of odd. Also, we need to know about the Biological Weapons Convention that it is a paper tiger. It is the only arms convention that has no verification mechanism and no way to deal with violations. And there's a reason for this. When initially written up and passed by the various countries that acceded to the BWC, there was no verification protocol, and an ad hoc committee was put together because this was seen as a grave omission, and an ad hoc committee spent quite some time hammering out this protocol to allow the convention to do more than just get together and slap each other on the back. And this was presented to the convention in May of 2001, a scant, less than 6 months before the attacks of 9/11 and the anthrax attacks, okay? The reason that this was not verified and accepted by the convention is due to the actions of the ambassador at that point to the UN from the U.S. I'm sure you'll recognize his name, John Bolton. So under the direction of John Bolton, the entire U.S. team stood up and walked out of the room. They boycotted the verification. That's why this convention remains toothless and actually rather futile.
You wrote an article titled "A Disturbing Aspect to Shelter-in-Place." Shelter-in-place may expose one to contamination, and this includes a reference to the double waterline and other things. Would you go over that article, please?
Yes, I'm very glad that you brought this up because we want to circle back now to, you know, what all this activity, this legal hanky-panky has to do with the double line water system, and what does that have to do with the pandemic? Because I am stating now as clearly and loudly as possible that lockdowns where people can't leave their homes because of a healthy people can't leave their homes because of this COVID situation, I'm saying that by locking people in their homes and making sure they can't go out, you're actually enabling an attack through this double line water system. And I'm afraid that the scenario that we're seeing with lockdowns and so forth may end up enabling a diabolical scenario such as this. Previously, we talked about this mainline X the one that seems to be such a secret. We talked about it maybe having vodka in it. Well, you know, what if it had Ebola? What if it had smallpox? We don't know. They can put anything they want to through that second line.
I guess some ways to maybe protect yourself from a dual line water system that has the potential for some kind of toxic substance to get into your shower or faucet is maybe a filtration system. That could be some method to protect you.
Depending on what the toxin is, and at this point, anybody's guess is as good as anybody else's, what they may be going to use.
Do you have any suggestions for ways that people can protect themselves?
Well, you know, filtration is always an idea. I think the best idea is to start storing water before the lockdowns become mandated and unavoidable. Store water. That's the best suggestion that I have at this point in time. There also, you know, have been people who have been interested in contacting their city water systems and asking, you know, for proof about what their blueprints show in their street. And I always encourage people to ask those questions as well. You know, we're in a life-threatening situation now. We're dealing not only with the possibility of a toxic substance being pumped selectively into houses through water lines. We're dealing with questionable vaccines, and there are even further concerns now. So I just sort of look at the situation as presenting a number of possible vectors for attack, and I just want people to be as safe as possible.
In that article, you mentioned vaccines. A lot of the listeners, they know about the vaccines and the mRNA vaccines, which essentially will reprogram your cell. That's the idea behind that. But there are other types of vaccines with adjuvants added. There's another vector that you mentioned in that article regarding pharmaceuticals. Would you talk about that, please?
Yes. There have been rumors, we shall say, for a long time that both the old USSR and possibly even the current manifestation of Russia, but certainly also the United States, has developed a, shall we say, cache of what we're calling imposter pharmaceuticals. Let's say an intelligence target consumes something they think is their, you know, their everyday hormone or an antibiotic or a statin drug or something they're used to taking, the imposter will produce a cardiac emergency and very likely death. And this has been discussed and bandied about for some time. But we're now aware that these imposters are being used, and they are being used very likely in hospitals and nursing homes to ensure the rapid exit of dispensables, I call them, you know, older people. There are some political targets who are now claiming that they have been given by their friendly neighborhood pharmacist a bottle of imposters. I have some in my possession. I have made efforts to contact labs to get these tested. I have not been successful. An NGO in Europe, Ecoterra, sort of picked up on this and was also contacting labs trying to get an agreement to simply test some of these pills, and also has not been successful. So we do not have a bona fide chemical report saying, you know, what this pill contains, you know, cyanide or whatever. We don't have that. We have individual reports and ramping up concerns.
especially when we're in a situation here in the United States and other parts of the world under a never-ending scenario of shutdown. So these topics that we're bringing up are not as paranoid seeming as they used to be. Years ago, when you were on the show, I'd say a decade ago, this topic was really edgy and people dismissed it. But there are people in place working within a system that are trying to get rid of people right now.
Unfortunately, that seems to be the fact. I do want to mention that I have a book to be published by Trine Day, which will be out in a couple of months, titled At the Breaking Point of History, How Decades of U.S. Duplicity Enabled the Pandemic. And all this information we've been discussing today and more is contained in the book. So I'm hoping that we still have a window of opportunity here where people who are really waking up in droves will be able to take the appropriate steps to protect themselves.
I think so as well. I mean, what we're seeing, and we have the information is flowing all around us. At least we can begin to understand what's happening. And those who are being honest with themselves and have the capacity to use the information that they're gathering, it will be very helpful to invert and resist what's happening around us. But we're watching this buildup of, you know, some people call it an open-air prison that will have people tracked and traced. We're under 24/7 surveillance, whether you're in your home or you're not. And this is very similar to a system that's implemented in China, as many know, their extreme surveillance system, their social credit scores. So there are elements of that coming into the United States that may be implemented onto the rest of society that is here after there's a significant purge.
Yes, and concerning a purge, I want to reiterate, well, two of these particular systems, the Double Line Water System and the Imposter Pharmaceuticals, are selective. So we live in a society where gangbangers might live next door to teachers, might live next door to rabbis. So in order to only remove the individuals from society that are causing problems, this water line, double line water stuff is up to the task. And so are imposter pharmaceuticals. So you end up on a list and there you go. So, you know, I was told by someone who had become aware of my work on this some years ago that I simply come forward with all this too early, because a few years ago people were settled in and complacent and didn't see much going on that was threatening. But hopefully now, with people becoming more and more concerned, this information will hit home.
I think people are seeing the threats now, especially when it pertains to people who normally speak out and there's not really a partisan issue involved, and then they get railroaded. One example is Mark Crispin Miller. If you would, could you tell listeners what happened to him?
Yes, Dr. Miller has been a tenured professor in the communications department at NYU, and he regularly teaches a class on propaganda. And one of his students apparently took issue to his encouraging his class to look at some of the protocols that we're now under, including masks, as possible propaganda. And she called for his firing. And apparently NYU is taking this very seriously and has launched a review of Dr. Miller. They've called him on the carpet. And I did write an article about this. My articles are currently being featured in Activist Post. We have multiple efforts to shut down voices of reasonable, rational, educated voices of protest and concern.
I find it odd that level of complaint would have any weight to it, especially now when information is coming out from neurophysiologists and other doctors about the impacts of wearing a face mask and the effects it has on the hippocampus of the brain, long-term memory damage. That information should be paramount and at the forefront, but we're not hearing anything like that.
I want to thank you so much, Jeff, for having me on the air and the other guests that you are featuring who are, in a sense, canaries in the coal mine, who are pointing out the depth of the iniquity that we are now catapulting into.
Well, I really appreciate being on the show, Janet. If you would, could you tell listeners the title of that book that's coming out through Trine Day Publishing very soon, and how do listeners contact you?
Yes. The book is titled At the Breaking Point of History, How Decades of U.S. Duplicity Enabled the Pandemic. And to contact me, you can find me on Facebook. That's a good place to find me, I think. I can give out an email address, which is jcphalen@protonmail.com.
Okay, jcphalen@protonmail.com. Janet, thank you so much again for being on In Other News.
Thank you, Jeff, so much. Stay strong, keep the faith.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.